Welcome to Taft Talks, a podcast from the Modern Law Firm. In this ongoing series, Taft Talks Probate, Minneapolis private client partner Bob McLeod discusses hot topics and timely information surrounding private client litigation for trusts, wills, guardianships and conservatorships, and more.
Welcome to another edition of Taft Talks Probate. I'm your host, Bob McLeod, and today we're going to talk about something that's kind of on the fringe or edge of probate, and that's the Indian Child Welfare Act. And we have a recent Supreme Court decision that touches on, specifically addresses this act. This act is important because it touches on adoption and foster care proceedings involving Indian children. And that touches in probate more often than you might imagine, particularly in the guardianship area. So we're going to review the what's commonly referred to as the Brackeen decision, B-R-A-C-K-E-E-N. The full title is Hallin, Secretary of the Interior versus Brackeen. The Supreme Court issued this decision on June 15th of 2023. This case, I'm going to quote from the decision here a little bit. This case arises from three separate child custody proceedings governed by the Indian Child Welfare Act, a federal statute that aims to keep Indian children connected to Indian families. ICWA governs state court adoption and foster care proceedings involving Indian children. Among other things, the Act requires placement of an Indian child according to the Act's hierarchical provisions unless the state court finds good cause to depart from them. Under those preferences, Indian families or institutions from any tribe, not just the tribe to which the child has a tie, outrank unrelated non-Indians or non-Indian institutions. Further, the child's tribe may pass a resolution altering the prioritization order. The preferences of the Indian child or her parent generally cannot trump those set by statute or tribal resolution. So this is a federal law that provides dictates or rules regarding something that has historically been a state matter, namely adoption and foster care. In other words, normally adoption and foster care is handled under state law. But if an Indian child is involved, this federal statute has a policy of trying to preserve the Indian culture and Indian families by placing priorities and rights to object and so forth into the what would normally be a state proceeding for adoption and foster care. This has been litigated in a couple different states here. These three different cases have different states implicated. And it's a very emotional topic, as you might imagine, because you've got people who are trying to adopt children. And if the adopting parents are not Indian, then you can imagine the pain that they go through in thinking they're about to adopt a child, or they've had a child living with them for a couple of years and the child is taken away from them. But the policy behind the federal law is not trivial at all. The policy behind the federal law is trying to preserve the rights of the Indian nations and their sovereign rights over their own people, and preserving the family units that have been so steadily destroyed over the years. Justice Gorsuch, in this opinion, wrote a summary of the need for this legislation. As he put it, this litigation and this legislation didn't happen in a vacuum. And Justice Gorsuch wrote an extensive, detailed summary explaining how Indian families have been torn apart over the years, and that the reason for this legislation was to try to prevent further damage. As Justice Gorsuch put it, quote, "To appreciate fully the significance of today's decision, requires an understanding of the long line of policies that drove Congress to adopt ICWA. And to appreciate why that law surely comports with the Constitution requires a bird's-eye view of how our founding document mediates between competing federal, state, and tribal claims of sovereignty. Close quote. He then details a long history of disappointing conduct by the federal government and others in damaging Indian families. And it's hard to give 40 pages of explanation any justice, and even the 40 pages doesn't satisfy it. But that aside, let's try to go to the opinion itself. Now, the constitutional challenges in the opinion are basically threefold. It is Article 1, whether Congress has the right to regulate in something that is typically a state law issue. The next argument is related to the 10th Amendment, whether the federal government can force states to engage in activity on their behalf, the federal government's behalf, called anti-commandeering statutes. And then finally, equal protection arguments. Now, the quick spoiler alert here is that the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of this act with a caveat. They did not address the equal protection argument. They held that the equal protection argument was not properly before the court, and we'll cover that, explain that just a little bit later on. Justice Barrett actually issued the opinion for the court, and it starts with the Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 constitutional challenge. The challenges to the Indian Commerce Clause, which, quote, which authorizes Congress to, quote, regulate commerce with the Indian tribes, close quote. And that's in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 of the Constitution. Now, the people challenging the federal statute make the argument that, very simply, children are not commerce, that the Indian Commerce Clause authorized Congress to regulate commerce with the Indian tribes, and that it is improper to say that Congress can pass laws related to the adoption and foster placement for Indian children, as Indian children are not commerce. On its face, it's a rather compelling argument. The Supreme Court's response is that commerce with the Indian tribes means commerce with the individuals composing those tribes. That's the quote they used. That goes back, I think it's about 100 years, to some old cases where the court had held previously that when the Indian Commerce Clause is implicated, it's not just regulation of commerce, but regulation related to not just the government entities, but the actual the individuals themselves that comprise the various tribes. And based upon those prior precedents, the court said that since the Indian Commerce Clause relates to the individuals comprising the tribe, that they could pass this legislation because it relates to the individuals who comprise the tribe, which include children. The dissents in this decision took issue with that conclusion, that this is a regulation of something that is normally reserved to the states, namely adoption and foster care. And this has nothing to do with commerce, the buying and selling of goods, and that this was stretching the intent and purpose of the federal clause. But the dissent is a dissent, and the majority opinion says that the Commerce Clause does allow the federal government to regulate individual persons, namely children, in this context. So for that reason, they held that the Indian Commerce Clause was not violated. The next challenge was the 10th Amendment challenge. Now, the 10th Amendment generally relates to the Constitution saying that the federal government cannot interfere with matters reserved to the states, that the federal government has the powers reserved to it in the Constitution, and anything not reserved to it belongs to the states. And that's in the 10th Amendment. And so the argument made is that the ICWA statute was interfering with powers typically reserved to the state. And they make three general arguments. First, they focus on the involuntary proceedings, and they argue that in involuntary proceedings, the states are required to make active efforts to keep the Indian family together. Of course, the intent and purpose of the statute is plain enough. That's exactly what they want. The federal government wants done. But the argument is that the federal legislation can't compel the state to take action on the federal government's behalf. It's called anti-commandeering challenges. But that is not completely true, primarily because when the ICWA statute applies, it can apply to the state or to private individuals. Private individuals may be subject to this federal legislation, and the state may become subject to this federal legislation, depending on who's bringing or participating in the adoption and foster placement proceedings. So this federal statute applies across the board, not just to the state or the actors in the state, but individuals as well. And the Supreme Court said we have plenty of precedent that says when federal legislation applies to the state and private individuals alike in the same even-handed manner, then the constitutional challenge does not apply because it's not a state action of some sort or the federal government interfering with state action. It is simply a statute that applies across the board to individuals and the state. So the states are not called out or specifically forced to do something that individuals are required to do. So it's not considered a violation of the Constitution. The same similar argument, 10th Amendment argument, was made with regard to placement preferences, where the parties have to make a diligent search for placement for the child. And the court responded the same way, saying, look, this applies to individuals under this statute as well as the state, if the state is implying or imposing the statute. So in a adoption or foster care proceeding, if individual parties are trying to seek adoption and foster placement, etc., the federal statute applies. And if the state is a part of the proceedings, then it applies to the state as well. It is even-handed on both sides, so it is not a federal law trying to force the states to do something separate. And the Supreme Court said that it is not a constitutional violation. Finally, the third argument under the 10th Amendment is that this statute requires the state to engage in bookkeeping, that the state courts have to transmit record of custody proceedings. And this is a kind of a bookkeeping requirement that the federal statute is imposing upon the states. And the Supreme Court responded that they have a long history of federal statutes that require this type of activity, and this is nothing new, and precedent has allowed this in the past. So it is still constitutional. Then finally, the last challenge was an equal protection challenge, saying that this statute specifically calls out individuals and demands actions based upon the race of a particular person. And of course, normally statutes that call people out based on race, religion, etc., would normally violate equal protection clause. This particular decision does not reach the equal protection argument. In this particular case, the court said that the remedy being sought at the lower levels was more injunctive in nature, and it simply was not an actual equal protection argument where the people being damaged brought an equal protection claim. And so this court said that the equal protection argument was not squarely before it, so they did not address it. Justice Kavanaugh wrote a simple two-paragraph concurring opinion trying to bring attention to this fact that the equal protection issue is undecided. Justice Kavanaugh noted that the equal protection issue will be able to be addressed when it is properly brought before the court by a prospective foster or adoptive parent or child in a case arising out of a state court foster care or adoption proceeding. So while this is a big victory for upholding the constitutionality of the Indian Child Welfare Act, the ICWA, the equal protection issue is still out there looming. It will probably be addressed sooner or later. I anticipate someone will bring an equal protection issue challenge to the court, maybe based on the equal protection issue alone. I would anticipate will eventually be addressed, as Justice Kavanaugh was noting, that the Supreme Court would probably address it in the future when the issue is properly teed up and brought before the court. So for now, the Indian Child Welfare Act is deemed a constitutional law. It is a law that allows the Indian people to be able to have an active role in preserving their culture, particularly through preserving Indian families and adoption of their children. It's a very emotional matter for all the parties involved when these things happen, very emotionally charged, and important constitutional issues before it. And it looks like, at least for the moment, it's a constitutional statute, but we can probably anticipate we will see a challenge to this in the future, and we'll certainly fill you in when that happens. Until the next time, thanks.
Thank you for listening to Tap Talks. If you liked this episode, leave us a review and make sure to subscribe to stay up to date with the Modern Law Firm. This podcast provides general information related to the law. Tap Talks is not providing legal advice and does not establish an attorney-client relationship. The opinions expressed on Tap Talks belong to the individual attorneys on the program and do not necessarily reflect the firm's position. For questions and comments, please contact podcast@taftlaw.com. Additional information about Taft can be found at taftlaw.com.